Okay, so this is, what is today? 25th of September 2018, come on. And what topic, all of a sudden, it's like, what happened? Where is my child? But all of you have teenage children? Yeah. Everyone else except for you, huh?
Yeah.
And some little ones also, I see. Mixed. Okay. We can do that.
They can also sit.
Yeah.
They are. Can or not can, they are. You can bring in the other ones too.
Okay.
Yeah, I will.
Maybe I should bring in my kids. I'll ask them if they want to come. I mean, I joined ISKCON when I was 17, 18. So I was a devotee teenager in that sense, but I didn't grow up in the movement. They've actually had experience growing up in the movement and being a devotee teenager. So they may have something to contribute that's better than... I've dealt with devotee teenagers as an adult. You know, as a real adult. So this is just open, whatever you want to talk about. If you're so shy that you don't ask anything, then we just have lunch.
Matsuchi, we had a question, like, when children are interacting with the outside world and they are learning something, all good things in Krishna consciousness, and they see something different outside, like people are very nice, devotees are very loyal, sincere, like they're very loving, warm, and the outside world they are very selfish, greedy, self-centered, they don't help with their heart, they have a ill motivation behind doing things. So then why these dualities, they cannot digest that fact. Why people are like that, and they get disappointed, dejected with the friendship they carry with others, and relationships, to handle relationships, that all relationships are like this, nothing is truth. So how to make them understand that it's...
So what I'm hearing you say is that all the devotee relationships are pleasant?
Whatever, at least
I think we're going to move here to Oman. Yeah? So I'm having a little difficulty understanding your question. So you're saying if when the children see that all the non-devotee relationships are, you don't want to kind of churn so that you're not just having your back. So you're saying that they see that all the non-devotee relationships are unpleasant?
No, we are teaching in Krishna consciousness that we should be like that. When we try to be like that, but we see these dualities, how to cope with
I'm still not understanding.
In Krishna consciousness, we teach them you have to be good, honest, be loving, caring, helping, everything. We try to be like that to everyone.
Yes.
But outside world, they see that the other person is not like that. They are self-centered, and they, when they want to have a genuine friendship with someone, they are cheating in turn. And they're not able to handle it. We become good, and
they're dealing with how do I be a good loving person when other people are not good and loving?
And how
is that the question?
And how not
is that
to get
your
affected by such?
Well, first of all, some people are not good and loving even if they're chanting Hare Krishna. In my experience, we have all different levels of devotees, and we have different levels of commitment. And there are some people who are not members of ISKCON, but they're still, they may be in the mode of goodness. Mm-hmm. I've met people in the mode of goodness who are not even theists. I've met atheistic people in the mode of goodness. In the scriptures, some demons can merge into the Brahmajyoti. That means they must be in the mode of goodness. There's even heavenly planets for the demons. You know that? If you're a good moral demon, if you're a good moral atheist, you can be a moral atheist. Remember, there's a heavenly planet for you. Probably more than one. So, I think it's more like, how do I be good and loving with people who aren't? I mean, I do see that generally among people who are not spiritually minded persons. And please don't think that only all the spiritually minded persons are in ISKCON and everybody outside ISKCON is not spiritually minded. That is not true. We have materialistically minded people in ISKCON, first of all. We have people who join ISKCON hoping they'll get a green card to America. Seriously. We do. Or they think, you know, oh, there's Western money here. If I, no, we have people who join ISKCON for other reasons. That is true. If you think everybody joins ISKCON because they want love of God, that's not the fact. And then there are people outside of ISKCON looking for love of God. Yes? There are people looking for love of God in every tradition. It is true that people who are very materialistic are they're ill-motivated and they're not aware of their ill motives. I mean, I found when I had a regular job in a government school, I was really surprised at how unaware people were of their own ill motives. It made me appreciate that with devotees, even if we're not very advanced, at least we have some idea that I have envy, I have lust, I have greed. At least we have some intellectual idea, you know. I had always been critical of the devotees, what I called humble talk. Oh yes, I'm so fallen, Prabhu. I always thought this so funny. But then I realized that most people, most materialistic people, they don't even have some concept of being fallen. You know, they have a concept that I'm wonderful and I'm great and everything I do is perfect. So in that sense.
How we can remain unaffected by, or how we can counsel our children not to get affected by seeing such, or having such experiences.
Actually, we should be affected. We should be affected in the sense of having compassion and mercy. We shouldn't be unaffected. Mm-hmm. We're not meant to be stones. But we shouldn't be affected in the sense of being, you know, personally surprised and hurt by the fact that conditioned souls are conditioned souls. And we should also be aware that we are probably also not as pure as we may think we are. So we may have ill motives that we're not aware of, and we may be, probably we are. If we say, I'm not a pure devotee, and I have anger and lust and greed and envy in my heart, if we say that as a concept, then probably there's some truth to it. And if there's some truth to it, this means that I am causing some harm to others, even if I'm not aware of it. And that my dealings with others have some element of selfishness, even if I'm not aware of it. So a little humility is a nice thing. Not just, I'm very pure in my dealings and all these other people are impure. How dare they treat me badly and how dare they disappoint me? So to realize that I also disappoint others and I also treat others badly. To use other people's bad behavior as a mirror and as a impetus for introspection and saying, wow, do I ever do that? I found that very useful. I took a 2-year course in counseling and we had 2 instructors and one instructor was what I would call a New Agey spiritual person, and the other was a very devoted Catholic. So it was interesting, the New Agey spiritual person was vegetarian and he liked Krishna consciousness and he had me bring prasadam for everybody. He let me take the course for free. He said it would be his good karma if I came for free. But he was very arrogant and he was very condescending to the students. And the one who was a very devoted Catholic, I mean, his whole life was working for Catholic charities and like that. He was a meat eater. But he had some mood that he was supposed to be humble. It was interesting. And so he was very respectful to everyone. So I was looking at these 2 teachers and thinking, which kind of teacher am I? Mm-hmm. You know, am I the teacher who respects everybody or am I the teacher who's condescending to people? So we can see in other people's good qualities and bad qualities. We can use it as a mirror for ourselves, and then we can be compassionate for other people's bad qualities. And if you're going to say, how do I not feel hurt and disappointed by other people's behavior, the only solution for that is to identify as a soul, and that my business is to please Krishna, not to please another jiva, and that other jivas are not the source of meeting my needs, only Krishna is the source of meeting my needs. My reason for feeling hurt and disappointment and so forth at other jivas' behavior is if I'm feeling that I'm entitled to have them treat me in a certain way, and I will only get my needs met if they treat me in a certain way, which is a very, on my own part, a very arrogant and distorted view of my relationship with other jivas. So if other people's behavior makes me feel angry and hurt and vengeful, that's my problem. That means I have some expectations of them. I think that they're God. I think they're going to meet all of my needs. Or I think I'm God, and they should meet all of my needs. So that's... Now, of course, if somebody is treating me cruelly, I also... This is Krishna's body and Krishna's mind. It's not that I stay around while somebody is beating me or something. You know, if you have no choice, if you're Haridas Thakur and it's the government beating you, what can you do? Well, you can't go to the police when the police are beating you. What to do? But if somebody's treating you very badly and you can leave the situation, but, you know, that anger toward them, that all has to do with expectations. But that's a question not about teenagers, but about everybody. And so reflect, when I see someone else's bad behavior, reflect, do I ever do this in any form to anyone? And I ask Krishna, do I ever do this in any form to anyone? Are you putting me in touch with this behavior so that I can have some self-reflection? Mm-hmm. And when I see somebody acting nicely also, I say to Krishna, Krishna, do I treat people this nicely? Am I this nice of a person? Are you pleased with me? You can always use people's behavior as self-reflection. Mm-hmm. To be inspired by other people's good example and to think about, instead of thinking, you know, I'm already wonderful. And then compassion for people, well-wishing for people. May this person become happy, may this person. That's a very good thing, by the way, every day to at least think of one person. May this person be happy. Anyone you see, you know, may you be happy, may you be happy, may you be happy. If somebody's acting badly, then that means that they're suffering inside. Always, always. Most bullies are cowards. Most bullies are insecure cowards. Yeah. May they become peaceful inside, may they become happy inside. And then also some intelligence to decide, what's my relationship going to be if I've got somebody who's chronically mistreats others. I have somebody mistreats others occasionally, and it's not violent, whatever. Everybody has faults. But if somebody's chronically cruel to others, then if I can change my relationship with that person just out of sanity, I don't walk in front of a car. That's just... There's so many wonderful people in the world. Why do I? I don't need to intentionally be with nasty people if I can avoid it. You know? And if I can't avoid it, then okay, Krishna, what do you want me to do here? What's my service here? What, you know, if you just can't avoid it, if at your job or your school there's somebody there, you can't leave your class, you can't leave your job. Like you're a doctor, you know, there may be some other doctor or some nurse or somebody in your who's just chronically nasty, and you're not going to quit your job. You go to school, there may be some teacher who's chronically nasty. You can't just leave the school. You can't just say, I want another teacher. Okay, Krishna, what's your job? In graduate school, I had one professor who was always inconsiderate of the students. Always. It was a professional degree. It was a PhD, but it was for professionals. Everybody was a working professional. The classes were in the evening. his classes were from 7 to 10 at night. And the first day of every semester, he would say, okay, all of you need to get these, you know, we had book to buy from the store, but also we had printed materials that he would give out. So most of the professors, you could download the printed materials online and you could use on your computer, you could print them. Or you could sometimes buy from, they would print it for you and you could pay like $10, $15 and you could get a copy or something. You know, they made it so that you could get it easily. But this professor would say, my secretary has two copies in the office. You have to go to my secretary and make a copy yourself, a physical copy yourself. And a secretary was only there until 2 p.m. every day. And our class was from 7 to 10 p.m. And everybody was working. And he would say this the first day of the semester, and he would say, by next class, you have to have gotten all these materials and you have to have read this thing. And in the class, he had materials for what we call an overhead projector, if any of you remember what that is. So it's printed on clear plastic, and you put it on this machine and it projects it on the wall. But the school had changed to a camera system. So it would see plain paper instead of transparent plastic. So he would put the transparent plastic on top of a piece of plain paper on the desk and the camera would project it. But because it was on plastic, it would make a prism. You understand? The plastic acted like a prism. So it would display rainbows. So you're trying to read the text on the wall and it's covered with rainbows. Did he care about the students, this man? Not at all. He didn't care about us at all. He made things difficult for us. But I had to have him as my professor. I didn't have a choice. And I was going in sari in Tila, but I didn't preach there unless somebody asked me. You know, I knew they wouldn't like it if I was going there and doing missionary work. So one day the professor asked in the class. Hare Krishna. So one day the professor asked in the class, "What is a materialist?" He asked the question. What is the materialist? So people were answering, and I also answered. Because he's asking the question. So the next week, we had class once a week for 3 hours. So the next week, he comes to the class, and he says, so I was thinking, my legal name is Edith. He was saying, I was thinking all week about what Edith said. I couldn't stop thinking about it. He said, I was even having difficulty sleeping. And I've realized, what do you think he realized?
That he was a materialist.
That he was a materialist. He said, I've realized that I am a materialist. And I didn't know how to cope with this. So that was my service, you understand? Krishna put me with this person. I had some service to do. And in some of my papers, I would bring in something about Krishna consciousness. So if we're with some very difficult person and we cannot remove ourselves, then we think, okay, where's my service opportunity? Is that okay? That wasn't specifically about teenagers. That's for everybody.
Any good note for all the teenagers? Parents.
The teenage parents.
teenage children. Parents.
They're not either of those children. Okay. Did anyone have a question specifically about teenagers? That was fast.
Maybe you are asking our children to chant. If they are not interested to chant, should we insist on it?
Why don't you guys answer that question? If you want to. If you don't want to, I'll try to answer. Up to you, if you'd like.
I mean, we'll both say no.
What?
We'll both say no.
Do you want to say anything just beside the word no?
I mean, if a kid doesn't want to do something, then they're just going to figure out a way to lie. Because especially parents are like constantly lying to them about stuff. They learn it from you. You know, you say, you have the chance, and they're just going to lie to you.
Yeah, so better you let them, you can encourage them, better to let them find their own taste on their own, rather than saying, you know, if you don't chant your rounds and you get some sort of punishment, that's a killer. You know, it has to be something that where they try it and experience it and decide for themselves if it's they enjoy it or not. And you know, because it's spiritual, there is a high likelihood if they're raised as a devotee that they'll eventually decide that they like it for themselves. But it's not something that you can force upon them, because I felt like, we both felt like, that was forced upon us at a young age. And so, you know, it took me a long time to understand that actually wasn't so bad. What was bad was the process of which it was being taught to me. And that is, you know, if you see it as a... And of course, this is true for even for adults, right? If you see your japa, you see chanting as a chore or a job, then it isn't really that much fun at all, you know? So, it's not a chore. It's something you do because you want to connect with Krishna, because it's enjoyable. It's enjoyable to connect with Krishna. But you can't mess with that too much. And if you mess with it, if you say, you have to do it, then how are you going to enjoy it? You know? So just be encouraging, but don't be forceful.
And actually, if my dad was just chanting in the front room, then we would automatically go and sit down and chant with him. But if he was like, okay, now you guys got to go chant your rounds, then we'll just go to our room and we'll just read and say that we're chanting. Like, that's what we all did, you know, so.
You can ask the same question to them.
That's an interesting answer. I would say also that we should be teaching our children how to chant. You know, if you want someone to get a taste from chanting, teach them how to chant properly. Chanting is a meditation. And I don't think for adults or children that we teach japa properly, generally speaking.
Manoji, one question is that normally we experience when child at the age of near up to 6 to 7 years, they listen to the parents and they are very enthusiastic to chant at this particular age. But after a certain age, when they cross 8 years, 9 years or 10 years, they lose the enthusiasm, maybe because we are forcing or we are not guiding properly. I do not know where we are in the fault. Or maybe they are busy into the studies and little material environment is also attracting them. So how we can encourage them in the viewpoint of Prabhupada, since you are associated with Prabhupada, and what Prabhupada guidelines to us as
If you're talking about japa, what I would suggest is meditation is now being taught to children and teenagers all over the world, generally Buddhist meditation. But it's becoming a very popular thing in modern society. And there are many schools where the children are encouraged to meditate every day for 10, 15 minutes. It's becoming part of society. And there are businesses that... again, strongly encourage and teach meditation. Like, one of the main businesses that does this is Google. And the person who was the leader of teaching meditation in Google is now, he's left the company, but he's one of the main teachers of meditation. He's a Buddhist. He's one of the main teachers of meditation in the world. You know, he's written at least 2 best-selling books on the process of meditation. And they're very good books, but unfortunately he preaches voidism in his end, I'd say they'd be very useful for anybody who wants to meditate, except he does have a conclusion in voidism. He says, at the end, you'll realize there is no self. He says, of course, I haven't realized that yet. He can't realize it because it isn't the truth. But, you know, I would look at how is meditation being taught to children. And I would say that often we do not teach japa as meditation. We teach japa as a ritual. And we teach it as some sort of mechanical ritual. And then it becomes, I'm sorry to say this, but it becomes a religion. It becomes a religious ritual. I mean, I was brought up in a different system. I was brought up in Judaism, but I always hated being forced to do religious rituals. And, you know, often the parents or the teachers who are forcing you to do the religious rituals are doing it themselves ritualistically, and they don't know what they're doing it for either. Like you're saying, the adults are lying, so the children are lying. The adults are not, they're not dealing honestly. What is this? Why am I doing it? How to do it nicely. So that would also be my suggestion. Now, it's also true that if people are very involved in materialistic activities, that can cover them so that it's very difficult to have a taste for something transcendental. Anyway, I just think it's crucial. We have some leaders in ISKCON who are really trying to teach meditative japa. But I would say that's very important. You know, we'll often just look at the mechanics. How are they sitting? How are they fingering their beads? Are they saying the mantra properly? But, you know, Jai Dorje said, it's about a relationship with Krishna. It's not. And frankly, for the children to have meditative japa, it should be extremely easy. Because the young children naturally think of Krishna as a real person. Right?
Yeah.
Krishna is not some idea. It's not a philosophical idea. He's a real person. So being able to feel that you're talking to a real person and you're meditating on a real person should be actually easier for them. Just, I'm curious, what is he doing in the room that we're staying in?
He's cleaning the...
He's trying to wipe and clean
the floor.
Clean the room.
I'm not happy with that. Okay, thank you. How do you